Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Clutch Conversations. It's your boy Mike. We back in the building one more again, live on a Thursday night. We got the Lone Star State in the building, Texas. Stand up. What's good, everybody? Man, really looking forward to the show. We're going to get into the show in just a second. But first and foremost, shout out to my lovely wife, Takar. Appreciate you holding us down. Appreciate everything you do for the fam. Appreciate it. Y'all make sure y'all show us some love in the chat, too. And also show that channel some love too. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, and hook smash that notification bell so you can get notifications each and every time we drop a video here on the channel. Shout out to the audio only gang. Don't forget, audio only versions of Clutch Conversations are available on all major podcasting platforms. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Definitely go out there and check us out on your favorite audio podcasting platform, and be sure to follow, rate, review, show us some love, man. We really appreciate the support. Speaking of support, if you're supporting this hobby in any shape, form, or fashion, make sure you're supporting US Art and US Art Florida. The link for both organizations are in the description of this video, so definitely go through, drop them a donation, get your membership, man. Make sure everybody that's in your circle know about US Art and US Art Florida. Definitely spread the word about both these organizations that help protect our rights as reptile keepers. And while you're out there spreading the word about USR, definitely spread the word about our sponsors. We're going to get this first sponsor video, then we'll be right back.
Big dreams start in small towns. Small Town Exotics is a family-ran business that specializes in high-quality ball python morphs, western hog noses, and select leopard geckos. They are proud members of USR, US Art Florida, and the Orient Society. Stay connected with Small Town Exotics on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Witness their journey as they grow their business and showcase their animals to the world. Thank you, Small Town Exotics, for sponsoring the show.
Art comes in many forms. At All Miss Angels, it comes to life.
Shout out to the sponsors, man. Appreciate you, Shane. Appreciate you, Justin. Let's see what we got in the chat tonight. Got the homie Arvin in the building. Game of Oz. What's good, bro? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. The homie Wiz in the building. Again, what's good? Shout out to the Wiz Tame fam, man. Appreciate the love. Appreciate the support. You know what it do. Big Bosa, what's up? The Sultan of Support himself. What's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Brian Heathen Hatchery, 352 in the building. What's good, bro? Appreciate you coming out. The homie RO 5.0, what's up, fam? Appreciate you coming out. The homie Eric's More Factory in the building. What's good, homie? Vinny, what's good, bro? Appreciate you coming out. Celtic Reptiles in the building. What's good? What's good? Dwight in the building, the pie man himself. What's good, brother? Appreciate you coming out. Shauna, what's up? What's up? Appreciate you coming out, sis. Chad, what's good, bro? Appreciate you coming out. Got Mercury Exotics in the building. What's good? Got the Pink Panther himself in the building. What's good, Sammy? Hey, we're going to stop it right there. We're going to kick this intro video, and then we'll be right back.
Won't you listen to me? I got that flavor. I know you're dying to feed. I ain't no dancer, just got some hip in my feet. Now throw your hands up. Ooh, you bring the lighter. I got the fuse. You make a fire. I'll add the fuel. Follow my lead. Just watch the shoes. Gotta turn the heat up.
Episode 114, State Property, Texas. What's up? How y'all doing?
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday, man. My favorite day of the week.
It's a mini Friday.
right, man. The weekend is just right around the corner. So how's it been going, man? Y'all have a busy week this week?
For us, we've been star testing here in Texas. That's that fun test that we have. So that's been pretty busy. I took my kids on a field trip today to the zoo, and it's a challenge. So I'm exhausted because, of course, my team is the reigning champs, and we have to keep that going. And then,
are you a teacher?
Yes, sir. I'm a teacher and counselor.
Okay. My wife is an elementary school counselor, so I know all about the star. Texas.
I bet you've heard a earful here lately.
Yeah, is that like a standardized test or something?
Yes, sir. That's our assessment for the students end of the year. Yeah, through the state.
Gotcha. You
know, our jobs and all.
Gotcha.
And then nope.
Good.
Property, because my horse came in from Mexico today, so I've been getting her settled in.
Nice. Yeah, I heard Jason was telling us that you just got a horse. I didn't know y'all had a horse, and now y'all got two horses. So do y'all breed them? Are y'all planning to breed them, or like, what's the plan with the horse?
That's the plan. She's papers, and she's flashy colored, so we're looking into that. And then she's also trained in reining, so that might be something we look into, whether I want to do that kind of amateurly on the side for fun, or if I want to have someone ride her and get some stuff under her belt just to make her breeding even higher up.
Nice. And I know you work with horses too, right?
It's a slippery slope, my man. Got five right now, but they're all rescue horses. But I would definitely recommend getting a trainer and having the rides on her, and then going into doing that amateur style, because reining horses, man, that's big money right there.
So y'all gotta fill me in. What's reining horses? I don't even know.
Style.
Yeah. Have you ever seen any of those videos of performance horses where they spin in circles real fast and they run and slide real far? Just different lopes at certain and they have to switch over at a certain time, just perfect that. It's a style.
Okay. Yeah, I have to check that out. That sounds pretty
cool. I feel left out. I'm in Texas and I don't have any horses.
Yeah, I was about to say, man, you like the odd man out in Texas. See, I got an excuse. I'm in Florida.
Everybody's got a horse and a pickup truck.
Hey, here, I got the mares. You get some stallions. We'll be ready to go.
I like it.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty cool. How long have you been working with horses?
I've had Goose. He's my first horse. I accidentally bought him in 2020.
Accidentally. Sounds like half my state collection.
Keep your picture all away from the button when you're watching an online auction.
Yeah. People don't understand that I'm actually, like, they think it's funny and I'm joking around, but I'm being dead serious when I say I accidentally bought him. Wow. I was doing one of my master's classes and I was typing an essay while watching that online auction on my laptop over here. And I heard him talking and I went to move my finger over the thing and apparently I clicked and they said my name. I was like, did I hear my name? And I had to scroll down to the bottom and it say my name, and somehow, you know, out of everybody bidding, I happened to be the last one. And I was actually watching two horses in that auction, and that was neither of the two horses.
Yeah, I'm sure there's worse things you can accidentally buy. That sounds pretty cool.
So
how's the season going for everybody?
That's a question for you.
Say again. You can go. You can jump in, Anna.
It's going pretty good. It's slow for me right now. I only have three clutches in the incubator, but I have seven that have ovulated and I'm just waiting. So I don't know. I my fourth season. I aimed for 33. I'm hoping for like 19, like usual. Overshooting it, but I don't. I think one of my two best clutches of 2024 laid yesterday, and it was a pinstripe double head black monsoon, black Azanthic monsoon to a banana Mojave pinstripe double head black Azanthic monsoon. So I'm hoping we got some Azanthic monsoons this season. I got two shots at them. So, oh please, dear God, give me that.
How many eggs, Anna?
I got six from her, and it was a first-time mom. And it looks like her sister, if she goes, will probably give me the same amount of number. They were the same weight, so I'm just got those fingers crossed. I'm like, oh, God, please bless me with this. We'll see.
Nice, nice. You say you're shooting for 33. Is that, as far as, like, compared to, like, other seasons, is that where you are at most of the time, or is that, like, high, low?
I usually just give myself some ridiculous number and then try to hit half of it. So I feel like I'm not that full of a failure. So it's like I have these females. I'm like, yeah, we'll see. But I started off with my list probably at 40. And going through it after the first 2 months, I'll drop females who I just don't want to breed or don't think I should. It's just one of those things you got to look at them for wellness. And I just go, you know what, we'll just knock you down. We'll wait till next year. I don't feel comfortable doing this.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Bill, how about you? How's your season going? I know you got like several species that you breed, right? Obviously the chondros, but you got ball pythons too. And don't you got Borneos
and carpets and rough scale pythons. My season's going great. This is the first year in 20 years that I have not paired a single ball python.
Oh, really? Was that it?
Yeah, it was intentional. I needed the rest. It seemed like the market needed the rest a little bit. I had stuff held over from the last year. I usually produce 40 to 50 clutches a year. So I produce a fairly high number of ball pythons every year. But I had two back-to-back heavy years of green tree clutches and expected a heavy year again this year, which it looks like that's going to happen as well. So it was a great year for me to just – man, just not Paris. It felt really weird. I've got all these ball pythons in my facility and didn't pair a single one.
Are you planning to hit the ball pythons heavy next year, or are you just playing it by ear and we'll see how it goes?
It'll probably be played by ear. Really, everything in my room now is centered around how the green trees go. And luckily, the green trees tend to go early. Like, I've got probably all my clutches in the incubator right now from the green trees. I might have one or two more females lay, but I can kind of base a lot of the other stuff around what they do, because one green tree clutch takes up about the same amount of time as 10 ball python clutches, to put it in perspective, like as far, because they lay more eggs and the babies are harder to establish, and you know, the whole, all of it is just more time consuming. So, you know, when I have four or five green tree clutches, that pretty much shuts down everything else, because I don't want to spend a whole lot more time than that, you know, working with the animals. So.
Gotcha. Real quick, shout out to the homie Big Egg from Static Morris. Appreciate the super chat, homie. #262. Good evening, my brother. Appreciate the love. So you said about four or five clutches from the green trees.
Yeah, I've got four clutches now. The first one's due to hatch in a week. And then I've got a couple other girls that are still pairing. My green tree season is pretty relatively short. You know, I pair winter and, you know, pretty much if they haven't done anything by this time of year, that they're just, it's not going to happen this year for them. So.
On average, how many eggs do they have in a clutch?
I like 12 to 16 would be a good range. It's not uncommon to lose some eggs along the way. It's not uncommon then, you know, to have difficulty establishing the babies too. So I probably average about 10 babies per clutch that I, you know, I get established when it's all said and done.
Compared to like the ball pythons, the actual breeding process itself and like getting them to go and stuff like that, is it easier for ball pythons and more challenging for chondros, or how's that go?
Yeah, I think it's more challenging for the green trees. Just every link, you know, in the chain seems to be just a little bit more complex or a little more fragile. And then by the time you get through the five or six links, then you go, wow, what happened to all my, what happened to the green trees, you know? But yeah, it's just, it's, first of all, it takes longer, right? Like females usually aren't ready to go till they're about 5 years old. Sometimes you can breed them successfully at four, but I usually wait till they're five. So right off the bat there, that's a, you know, a longer period. And then just every bit of it's harder, you know, the locking is not, you know, when I see ball pythons lock a few times, I get started to get pretty excited, you know, like, wow, that's good, good chance things are moving in the right direction. But with green trees, it doesn't really mean a whole lot, even just to get them to lock. So there's still a lot of stuff that, has to happen between that and like getting the baby done, you know? So yeah, they're more challenging. I won't even consider releasing a baby green tree till it's about 8 months old. That's if everything goes perfect.
That's what Jen was telling me, because I know she bought one from you, I think last year, and she was saying that it's like your standard operating procedure to hold it for like several months until you get it established and get it going and all that good stuff.
There's a lot of things that can happen that first few months. You know, they can eat, but then get finicky and go off food, or they can prolapse. You know, that first 6 months of their life. And so to me, I've just found it better to just be patient. It's better for me. It's better for the buyer, just to be patient, but it's time consuming. Right. You know, so I love it. It's a favorite thing, you know, that I do, but it's just time consuming.
Is that a standard practice like in the green tree community to hold them, or is it just something that you do?
I hold a little longer probably than most people that are selling babies, but not a lot. I mean, I think the gold standard is 20 meals. You know, you get 20 meals in it. That's where people start. And so I spread it out a little bit longer than that.
Gotcha. Shout out to the homie R.O. Appreciate the super chat, brother. Shout out to the mayor of Cundro Town.
R.O., yeah. R.O., he got it, recently got his first green tree, and he's absolutely loving it, I know.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody on the show a couple weeks ago. I can't remember exactly what show it was on, but I was saying I was trying to like not get into any more species. Like green trees is one on my list, but it's got to be like further down the road, that way I can like be prepared and like do the best by the animal. So I'm a chill right now, but I'm always looking at them. Like I love them. I love the ones you post. I know it's a bunch of people post like some really nice ones, and seeing them go through like the ontogenetic color chain, like it's just change is nuts.
They're a lot of fun. I love my ball pythons too, but just for totally different reasons. You know, I love my ball pythons because, unlike your other guests, you know, I'm back like in the 2000, you know, early 2000s, like what I produce. You know, I produce kind of the opposite of my green trees, very entry level stuff, you know, just eye candy for the new keeper. And that, you know, I really enjoy that part of it, introducing new people, new keepers to maybe their first reptile ever.
Nice. Jason, Cassie, how about y'all? How's y'all season going?
So far, so good. We've got three clutches in the incubator, had another ovulation or two. We're going to do our normal 10 or 12 clutches or so. Kind of intentional, kind of along the lines of what Bill was saying about the market. I don't want a ton of animals right now. So we're pretty intentional in our pairings, kind of doing our what we mainly focus on, DG clown stuff, and then,
you know, adding in some hypo.
Yeah, doing nice. Some do it and stuff like that. So
can't go wrong with that. So y'all went to the Dallas show. Tell us a little bit about that.
Show was good. Venue was big. It was different. You know, anytime you, I don't know how long we were in Arlington, but it was 20 years or so, maybe. I don't know. It was a while.
Yeah.
Sir?
Yeah, at least 20 years in Arlington. Yep.
It was a long time. So just a new venue. There were a lot of people there. And I think we talked earlier, accommodations will be better next time because I'll stay somewhere else. But that was, you know, as far as the show went, it was good.
Do you think they'll keep it there? Do you think they'll keep it at that venue? I mean, vendors were happy. People were happy.
My understanding is they're going to keep it there at least for the September show.
Okay.
Ugh. Anything else after?
Anna.
Why did they choose to move it? Do y'all know?
I believe the Arlington Convention Center became an art gallery or
it got sold.
An art museum. Yeah. Damn so. Art.
we make art. We make art.
Exactly.
That's true.
Nice convention center. So it's just hard to beat.
The one in Dallas is not as easy to get to. Of course, you know, it's the first time everybody's been, the first time I've been there. So I'm sure as time goes on, it'll get better.
And maybe not as visually appealing.
Maybe no murders within the week at that location. Just a thought out there.
Or car thefts.
Yeah, you got to tell everybody that story.
So I wasn't going to Dallas. I had a table and I gave it to my friend who had, you know, a lot of snakes to sell and I didn't have that many. And one of the reasons we didn't go to Dallas was Robert was like, that's not safe. We're not going to that general area. We're not staying at a hotel. If we go up, we're driving Saturday morning to set up. We're not doing this Friday crap. Just none of that. And so I gave my friend it and I told him numerous times. I was like, Dallas is not safe. If you carry, carry. It's that location we're going to is not safe. So he gets his hotel room Friday and then Friday night he gets his car stolen. And then he couldn't find a car Saturday. He was vending and he was still trying to find a car. And he ended up getting like a Penske truck to drive back to Houston with all of his animals. Oh, and I was like, this. And so Dallas doesn't investigate car robberies either. So when they took his statement, they took it over the phone and they do not investigate it because it's not worth their time. And so he has to wait 30 days for his insurance to finally say, hey, they couldn't find your car. Let's take care of this. But he's still paying for that rental car that he has. It was just all shitty. Or sorry, yeah, not shitty, poop. It was poop. I'm not cussing as much this time. It was poop.
So to go along with her story, a lot of times for lunch, we do Uber Eats. And so I'll see what's around, this and that, how quick they can deliver. Well, I stumbled upon this bakery and the cupcakes were looking, and I'm about a bakery. And so I was reading some reviews and it was pretty close. And it goes, pretty good bakery for being in the hood. Good. Okay. There's some confirmation there.
He said there was a lot of people that was pretty busy.
Yeah, we were kind of in the back of the building, but traffic was pretty good. It was, you know, it kind of came in waves, but people were, seemed to me like more interested in buying this time than they were in September, which is always a good thing.
Nice. So,
nice.
And it's true.
Just hit or miss because the September show, I think we had a not very good show at all, but a handful of people ended up having a decent show. Whereas this show, those same people had a terrible show and we honestly had a pretty decent show. So you never know which table they're going to buy from.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw somebody post up that they had got some from y'all. I think it was like maybe a Cypress Yellow Belly Clown hit DG, something like that.
Oh yeah.
Does that sound right? Sound about right?
Yes, that was Chandler. Cypress Yellow Belly Clown.
Yeah, yeah. So what all are you working in that DG Clown and DG Clown Hypo stuff this year?
We'll have Chocolate, Black Pastel, Cypress.
Confusion.
Trying to get Confusion into it. That's not going as well as I'd like, but hoping to have some new chocolate combos mainly. So
gotcha. What's the pain point with the Confusion pairing?
Excuse me?
What's the pain point with the Confusion pairing?
Just not getting to do my male. So
is it a younger male?
No, he's proven. He was proven last year. He's just
he's just a slow learner.
Yeah. He feels I really want him to, and so he's not.
Yeah, we had on the B team.
What's the pairing? What's the combos involved?
I'd put him to a DG clown, spot nose confusion clown to a DG clown. I'm trying to think what else I put him to. That was the main one for him. I'm using most of my other females and for the chocolate and chocolate combos. So
did we get a male from Miguel or did we get a female? What was that one?
Yeah, I've got a Black Pastel Chocolate Hypo Double Hit DG Clown male I'm using. So
okay.
I just picked him up from Always Evolving.
Nice, nice. What'd you put him to?
He went to a clown het DG, and he's got a spot nose DG het clown and a few others. So,
gotcha. Yeah, going back to that confusion, man, I had zero luck with confusion stuff last season. Like, I had probably about four pairs or so, like four clutches or so from one male. In each of those clutches, with the exception of one, I think I had shots at like making confusion clown combos hit zero. He was a head clown male. And then like I had like some health issues with some of the snakes. I ain't saying it's him, but it was just kind of like odd that it was the only health issues I had were with that male. But then I had like perfectly healthy snakes too. And one clutch that was like perfectly healthy that came from. So it was kind of crazy. I think I might have had five clutches from that guy. And I don't know if it's maybe I spread him too thin for the year. I don't know exactly what happened, but I didn't have a lot of slugs from him. In fact, I don't think I had any slugs from him, if I'm remembering correctly. I just had some issues, and then the odds guys I tanked on the odds with that male this year.
Were you having like genetic like kinks and blindness, you know, lack of eyes and stuff like that with the offspring? Or
so that- it wasn't kinks or lack of eyes or anything. It was so I usually wait to cut the eggs until after they pip, or like one or two of them pip. And so one, two would pip, and then I would cut the clutch, and like they would crawl out the egg, but the yolk sac was still attached. And yeah, so like that was an issue. And so I had to wait for them to like absorb the yolk. And a couple of them had like hard belly, and a few of them didn't make it. You were just, I don't know. It was just, I don't know. Like I said, I can't like beyond the shadow of a doubt say it was that male. It could have just been coincidence. This year, I'm not really breeding that much. I'll probably do like one or two. In fact, he's only allowed with one girl so far this year, and I may do two, but I'm hesitant to like put him to like a bunch of stuff.
I get it.
Yeah, it sucks. That was the first year I had experienced anything like that, like as far as like losing animals and stuff like that. So it sucks. Up until then, I had good luck and success with that stuff. So speaking of challenges, I guess we can swing back to you, Bill. Like, you were talking about some of the challenges like with the green trees and stuff. How long have you been breeding the green trees, and how long was it before like you kind of like felt like, hey, I've got this down, like I know what I'm doing, I got it?
I started keeping green trees like about 2010, and then I think I did my first breeding in 2013, and have, you know, produced green trees usually, you know, one or two clutches a year since then, except for the last few years, my numbers have really have taken off, which is awesome. But I would never really say, I don't think we've figured out breeding green trees yet the way that we have ball pythons. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of stuff that people can do it the exact same way or very close to the same way. And some people are successful and some people aren't. And so I wouldn't say that really anybody just has them dialed down. You know, that's why there's only, you know, there's less than 100 on Morph Market, right? And not 45,000, you know, pythons. It's because they're just hard. You know, they're hard, and you can do everything and provide them with, you know, what should be optimal conditions, and then they just don't, you know? So I think we still have a lot to learn about breeding. The good news is that we have the husbandry really dialed in. And I tell people all the time, and, you know, I would have got green trees 10 years before I did, but, you know, I had experienced at shows and had heard they're difficult to keep and they're super defensive. And, you know, you get a green tree at an expo, and that's a lot of times going to be the case. But now captive bred green trees, you know, I tell people you get the right animal, which is like a captive bred animal, from the right person, which is, you know, a reputable breeder, put it in the right box, and, you know, there's a 95% chance that you're going to have a lot of success with that animal. And so I think, you know, we've come a long way in the keeping and the husbandry of green trees. The breeding, unfortunately, still a lot to learn.
And are you keeping any other species other than ball pythons, reptile-wise?
I have a spider.
You got a spider?
Wait, that's not a reptile. I have a chameleon.
Okay.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. That
chameleon.
I'd love to have a chameleon. They're too damn hard to take care of, though.
See, that's what I thought, too. But I found a local Texas breeder called Reddy's Rainforest, and I saw her at Arlington last year. And I was like, is it hard to keep chameleons? And she's like, people think that, but it's not if you know the basics. And she gave me this care sheet and stuff. Yeah. And then after Arlington, I hit her up like a month later and said, hey, do you have a chameleon? And I actually went to, I think, a Repticon to go buy one from her in the kit. And she was fantastic. She let me ask her all these questions after I got him home. And my little idiot dude won't eat dubia roaches. And he seems to be the only chameleon who will not eat a dubia roach. He's scared of them. And I was like, what is this? And she's like, I don't know. He used to eat them for us. And I was like, this little man person over here.
You almost
like, no, I love my chameleon. He's easy for me. I get sprayed twice a day and make sure he has food for him. And it's just fun to watch him. And I don't do anything with him. I have no plans on breeding chameleons. I just wanted a pasture pet in the house instead of outside. And so his name is Boba. And I'm just like, this is the coolest thing. And then everyone's like, what do you do with him? I was like, you just look at him. He's art.
Just look at him.
Do you handle him any?
I do. I handle him some. He only likes me. He won't get on Robert's hand, and I'll take him outside and stuff. Really freaked out the goose. The goose was not a fan of Boba, and Bruce kind of flew away, and I was like, all right, well, that solves this question. And so I'll let him go out in the summertime and just, you know, we'll be outside for 5 minutes. He'll be on my arm. He'll just hang out in the sunlight, and then we'll go back inside. But other than that, I mean, he's very chill. Doesn't have any issues. I would never thought a chameleon would be easy to keep. And she was like, no, that's just a misconception. Or you get it from a shitty breeder. And I was like, that's true. But it was easy for me. I enjoy my chameleon.
They're really cool. So,
yeah, they look really cool. Jason, Cassie, y'all keep any other reptiles?
I have a bearded dragon in my classroom as our school class pet. She's really, really good, and she's good with the kids, and they love her, and they do a really good job of taking care of her.
Nice. Remind me, what grade is it that you teach?
Fourth, fifth, and sixth.
Fourth, fifth, and sixth. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So you just want animals, not other animals, right?
Hey, all animals are welcome. What else you got?
Got chickens and turkeys and one house pig and one inside outside pig. So that we have bees and the two horses. He's got some tracking dogs.
I think I remember y'all telling us a story like last time y'all were on the show about the pig.
The pig, the Reba. Yeah. Oh goodness.
Yeah.
So it stays in the house like a dog.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to lie, though. Pigs are way easier than dogs. They're smarter. Oh, really? They train faster. She's very routine oriented. So, yeah. As long as you're
not my pig.
Dinner,
you said not your pig?
She said she loves her pig.
Okay. I love my pig. Her name's Porkchop, and I'm eating her in November, but I love that pig right now. She's the coolest thing ever.
He has dogs. I've got a pot belly,
or two. See, I wanted a pot belly, and Robert said we're not getting another animal unless you can eat it. So we ended up with a Berkshire, and so that will be something I'll start breeding this year is Berkshires.
Very cool.
I thought that was, she's so cute, and I stupidly named her Porkchop, and I'm gonna feel horrible for eating her. I'm like, sorry, Porkchop. But she's smart. They learn tricks like this. And I'm looking at my livestock dog like, why aren't you this smart and stupid dog? You don't protect anything. And Robert's like, she's 5 months old. I was like, she can fucking learn. I'm going to go put money in the share jar again.
Days old. And she was potty trained with the litter box. I mean, like, really, that second day. I'm not even kidding. It's that easy.
Dang. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
How big is it?
She is probably about as tall to my knee, and I'm pretty short. I'm 5'3" on a good day. So short, but she is on the compact side. She's a little chubby. Yeah, we've got a pine tree in the backyard, and I don't roller them up, and she indulges herself. So,
gotcha. So, Anna, are you making like a conscious effort not to cuss? Because I heard you say something about the swear jar.
I'm trying. It's really hard.
What prompted that?
My mom really wanted me to stop using the C word describing my family members. So I'm making a conscious effort to relax slightly. Gotcha. It's really, I still cuss out the snakes every day. Just, we're making small steps. And people online, you know, they always go, Anna, you're so ragey. And I'm like, I'll calm it down a little bit. And so every time I do one of these podcasts, I always go, I will have some person comment and go, do you know how many times you cuss? And they'll list them out for me. And so I'm in a bet with my group right now that I'm not going to cuss very much.
Okay. Any specific number? I haven't been keeping track, but it's only probably like once or twice so far.
I think I'm at six.
I didn't hear it.
I'm trying to do less than like 10.
Okay. All right.
Hopefully.
You can do it. So one of the things we like to do on these state property episodes is like really give like state flowers and shout outs to folks in the reptile community, like in your respective state. So I guess we can start with you, Anna, and in a cuss word free way, who are some folks in the reptile community that you can give a shout out to? You want to show some love to in Texas?
We can do Mergin Morphs. We can do Arvin, who's in the chat. We can do, now you say that, I forget everyone's names. Feely's Clutch, we can do him. I'm not going to get shit for this because I don't remember people saying, skip me. I don't want to do this. It's too much pressure.
You can always come back and add to the list. What about you, Jason?
I'll come back.
Who are the El Paso ones? Like she said, Feely.
Yeah, Feely. D-Rod in Odessa. Butte in Abilene. Lots in Texas.
El Paso, but I can't remember. We didn't go. Oh, Oscar and Karen. Okay, up in like Lubbock.
Yeah, they're in Lubbock.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, up in. Oh, okay. Or OKC. And but Bearden's in Oklahoma, right?
Yeah.
Gotcha. What about you, Bill?
I've got to narrow it down to my ball python friends. I can't be naming my green tree friends here. Nobody will know who they are.
Yeah, you can show them some love. That'll make people go look them up and check them out.
I'm gonna give a shout out to RO 5.0, even though he's not from Texas. He's a transplanted Texan. I know he goes to San Antonio a lot, so I'll give him a shout out. And then there's quite a few local ball python people in my area. Sean Barnett is a good friend of mine, and he's close. Ken McAlexander of Ball Python Investments is here and close to me. Michael Castillo, Urban Albino, is in my neck of the woods. All those guys, good people. And I see all these people, you know, at local shows in the DFW area. I don't vend the big shows. You know, I take my ball pythons, my entry-level ball pythons, and take them to the local shows in Arlington and North Richland Hills, and there's a Dallas Repticon, and so that's where I get to, you know, primarily see my ball python people at those expos.
Gotcha. I've been seeing the Ball Python Investments pop up a lot lately. I think it's on Morph Market because I think they're like one of the sponsors. You know, when you like scrolling through, yeah, you like see the pages. Yeah, I've been seeing that a lot lately.
Yeah, he's a good guy. That's Ken McAlexander. He's been in the game a long time. I mean, as long as I have, maybe longer. So he's a real good guy.
Gotcha.
Ooh, I got one.
You got one?
I remembered. Earl, Lone Star Reptiles.
Oh, yeah, I'll give Earl a shout out.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows Earl.
You got Python Paint Jobs. Who's that? It's a pear, Python in a pear tree. Is that a real person? I don't know if I just made that up. No, Fanny's Balls. that was the nicest lady I saw in Austin. And that was her name, Granny's Balls. And I was like, dig it.
I thought in a pear tree, that's Michael Pinnell. And Michael's also a good friend. Michael does carpets. Michael's like one of the kings, one of the founders of carpet pythons in the United States.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love carpet pythons.
He's a great guy. Michael Pinnell. Yep.
Yeah, I have to check him out. Yeah, I love carpet pythons. I got 5 of them. I got like a, yeah. I got a coastal, I got a brittles, and then I got 2 jungle carpet. Well, technically 3 jungle carpet pythons. I got a highlighter line jungle carpet, like a regular jungle carpet, and then I got a jungle zebra.
Have you ever heard of M-Pen, the M-Pen line of coastal carpets?
Uh-uh.
That's Michael Pinnell. And he, you know, he was literally one of the first persons to work with and bring coastal carpets in the United States.
Yeah, my coastal, she's getting pretty big, and she's been like puppy dog tame like the whole time I had her. The only ones that were kind of like nippy at first were the jungles, but they got over it after a while. I got a male who been like, he took the longest to get over it, but he been like super chill lately too. I still ain't like gave him the full green light that he would never do anything, because like he's had times before where he was like chill for a while and then he had an incident. But he's been good like for, this is probably the longest stretch of time. Like, and maybe it's just like him maturing, getting older, getting bigger, getting more confident and like used to like the stuff that goes on. Like, he's been chill too. I love carpet pythons.
A lot of people use carpet pythons as kind of like the entry level into green tree pythons. And I was one of those people. I was into carpet pythons for a long time before I got my first green tree. And there's a lot of overlap in that community.
Okay. What are carpets you working with? And how many clutches of those you breed in a year?
Oh, you know, back in the day, 10, 12 years ago, I was having 6 or 8 carpet python clutches a year. So I had a bunch, and most of them were primarily morphs. So I worked with albino, did a lot of the first jungle jag combos that came out in the United States. And then, of course, the zebras, super zebras, granites. I mean, I tried my stint at Carpondros for several years, and that was heartbreaking. So right now I just have 3 carpet pythons, and I don't even breed them. They're just got 2 females and a male, and they're just here because I like them.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I heard you talk about the Carpondros on somebody's show. I can't remember, but you were talking about like kind of like your, so they broke your heart, something like that.
They broke my heart. Yeah, they were. I love them. This is a Carpondro right here over my shoulder, a 50-50 Carpondro.
Nice.
He's absolutely amazing. He looks like a carpet, but acts like a green tree. So, but yeah, my days of trying to produce them are over.
Hey guys, we're going to take a real quick sponsor break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about the market.
Peace and love, family. We invite you into the heart of our serenity, Ancestral Royal Pythons. At Ancestral Royal Pythons, we're not just breeders, we're nurturers of love and growth. Each of our high-end ball pythons is a tribute to the grandeur of the natural world and our dedication to quality. Reach out today and bring one of our creations into your home. This is Ancestral Royal Pythons. Your journey begins here.
Here's to the exciting world of ebony and ivory reptiles. From unforgettable parties and events to keeping and hatching some of the dopest reptiles in the reptile hobby, we're all about education, quality, integrity, and respect. Hit us up and see how we can help make your next project a reality. Experience Ebony and Ivory Reptiles, where fascination meets fun.
Ebony and Ivory Reptiles.
Shout out to the sponsors. Appreciate you, Jason. Appreciate you, Matt and Kendra. So, market-wise, do y'all feel like it's starting to be a little bit of uptick? What are y'all's thoughts on that? Anybody can jump in. Don't everybody jump in at once, though.
we did better. We did decent at Dallas, and so, you know, I don't know if that means market's upticking or not, but and the people around us that were vending around us seem to do pretty good. So, from my perspective, people are more interested in buying. So I'm hoping that trend continues.
Nice. I think that's true. I think it's going up, or I think it's coming back. Not going up, but coming back.
So everything I've heard, you know, has been similar. My stuff has been, it's down from, let's say it was 2 years ago. But it's not horribly down. It's just down enough where, like I said, this was just a good year for me to take off and not any more mouths to feed. And I've still got plenty of animals to show at the expos that I vend. And, you know, between that and just local sales and repeat, you know, return customers, you know, it's been a good last few months.
Nice. Yeah. I feel like it's, I feel like stuff picking up, like we've been selling stuff, more so than we had sold in the past, because we had more animals, but I do feel like people are kind of like in the market looking a little bit more now. And so I definitely hope that trend continues, this year, like production wise, I wouldn't necessarily say it was intentional. It's kind of like, based on like circumstance, but we'll probably be producing less than what we produced last year. But I'm okay with that, as long as like some of my more like important projects go, like my more like the projects that I'm most excited for and like really looking forward to the most. As long as some of those go, like I feel good about it, even if it's just like a smaller number of overall clutches, and then just kind of be ready to see how it looks next year and see if we want to kind of like ramp it up a little bit next year.
That seems to be kind of a common theme. You know, so many people I've talked to ramping back, focusing on projects, you know, coming out of COVID, it was like, pair everything you can. Doesn't matter what it is. Just get it together, pair it, produce as much as possible. And that worked great for a couple of years, but now it's time to, you know, refine a little bit, I think.
Facts. Yeah, like one of the projects, one of the pairings I'm most excited about. So I got a vanilla Dark Knight hit hypo that I'm pairing to and Jason, I think I told you about this, that I'm pairing to a chocolate leopard Huffman double hit hypo clown. So I'm really looking forward to that, because it's a lot of dope animals that can come out of that pairing. Hopefully the odds gods shine down their brightness on me and hook me up. But I'm really looking forward to that and just pushing a lot of projects forward.
For sure, that's an exciting pairing.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. And then I got some others too, just like in some like multi-recessive stuff. I definitely, like you said, just really been focusing and trying to like push forward like some of the stuff that's going to hopefully like get me ahead in the next few years. So that's definitely the strategy. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some controversial stuff.
So you got to be careful, Anna. This story's gonna get you.
This is where the swear word is gonna come out.
Yeah, that's where my total just goes out the window.
So there's a lot of controversial opinions, just in the reptile world in general. It's not necessarily even just the reptile world. It's like whatever world you living in. Some people like what you say. Some people don't. So we'll start with you, Anna. Talk about like some maybe unpopular opinions you have about the reptile world, ball pythons, anything kind of like the reptile universe.
Can I be last for this? I'm going to go on a rant, and I don't want to be on a rant today.
We need a rant. We need a rant. We got time for it. We're here for it.
controversial stuff, I think it's people's egos that need to be checked. And I get labeled, I'm just going to cuss, I get labeled a cunt all the time because I will check somebody. And it's funny that people can go and play the victim when they fucked up. And then they'll go cry to 12 other people, cry to other people who will come back to you and just complain about stuff. And it's something you couldn't even fix if you wanted to. And you could be the bigger person and just move on past it. Or you can sink down to their level and crush them like a little bug.
Anna, so, you do great in the green tree community. I'm just telling you, if that's what you like, if you like to, you know, if you want people to call people out, then, I mean, the condo community is so small, it's easy to do, and people don't get away with much bullshit.
I'm flabbergasted when I see just random shit pop up. I'm just like, why are we even talking about this? Why is this blasted? Why? And then one of the big controversies, and, you know, right, Brian, was people gave him shit for how he used to keep his animals 20 years ago. But it baffles me that people don't understand. Without Brian or Nerd, we would not have the husbandry standards that we have today. They are the godfathers who literally pushed what it was to keep better animals. And everyone always evolves. Everyone always tries to do better. And you hold on to some grudge from a year and a half ago. You're just a little peasant person. You're not even on my level. It just pisses me off so much. And if my voice is annoying to some people because I'm on this podcast, you can kiss my ass. How about that? If you were better, you'd be on it.
Ass doesn't count as a swear word either.
That's right. Saying that for my donkey in the future. But I'm just, and I hate doing podcasts because I always get shit for it. People are for whatever reason, so upset about something I either say or I do or I cuss too much or something I did a year and a half ago, or they're little bitches who just can't get over something I can't control. You know what I mean? And they're in Texas. If you were a better breeder, you'd be on the podcast too. Or if you were dumb, or if you did something that made you worthwhile instead of just being a little bitch and just talking shit. God. I'm over the swear jar.
did people give you flack last time you was on the podcast about something you said?
Yeah, I get shit for stuff all the time. And I'm going to bring this up because there's one issue that happened. And it was about a snake I imported 2 years ago, okay? I bought it as a pastel banana DG, okay? I sold the snake probably 3 months later. Didn't have the snake in my collection very long. I sold it simply to buy and pay for the pasture fence up front for my property because we had just moved here. Like, I got the house in April. The snake was imported in March. I sold it in May or June to make sure I could pay for my pasture fence. I also sold my car. Like, this wasn't a small sale. Like, I got rid of good-looking animals. So the person who bought the animal 2 years ago, who came to me, I don't know, last month, said she shed tested the animal and it didn't come back as DG. Nothing I could do about it. I did not produce the animal. I was transparent throughout the whole thing, told her who produced it, who I got it from, showed the conversations, all the stuff. So I reached out to the guy who I imported the snake from, who is a very reputable European dealer, who I even asked Justin about, like, hey, is this guy legit? And he was like, yeah, I've done business with him before. So I said, hey, this is what's happened. What can we do to resolve this issue? Okay. Now he's somewhere in Europe, I think like in Norway or somewhere, somewhere stupid where he's like 16 hours ahead. So when I send him a message, he's not going to respond instantly. Okay. It's just not going to happen. So she sent me a nice message and all this stuff. Well, it comes back to me from somebody else. That's this lady has been talking shit about me selling this snake. And a person who reached out to me had no idea I was even in DG, and he heard it from someone else that she had talked to. So I confronted her, not a very nice way. I will admit, I did not confront her professionally. I went on a full-on rant, called her cunt, all this stuff to her. I was just like, come to me directly if you have an issue. You know what I mean? Don't be a little bitch and go in a group chat and all this stuff and just start talking to all these people. I'll work with you, but not if you're going to do this. And so I admit, didn't do it professionally. Do I regret cussing her out? Absolutely not. I'm one of those people, if you have an issue, you come to me directly and I will help you if I can. All right. So I will admit when I make mistakes. And so I worked with the guy who I bought the snake from directly, got her and the dude in a group chat on Instagram to work it out. And she messaged me saying, well, I've put a lot of time and effort into this female just for her to be my most expensive snake and not be DG. I want $1,100. You're not going to get $1,100 from me. I'm not paying you shit for a snake I didn't produce that you bought 2 years ago that I am trying to make right. So the producer of the snake said, hey, I will replace the snake, but you have to pay for shipping. Totally thought that was okay. She wanted me to pay for it. I wasn't going to pay for it. It's not my fault. The snake I sold you and completely transparent about it was not gripped. The guy who produced it is willing to fix a mistake from 2 years ago to help you. And she nonstop been just a bitch about it ever since. Nothing I can do. I even reached out to Morphmark and said, if this chick comes back, you know, is this on me? No, it's on her. I have written, you know, confirmation from Morphmark saying this is on the buyer. It's not on you. You were completely transparent. We saw your messages. We've seen what you said now, blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, there's nothing else I can do. I'm not paying for shipping. I'm not paying you $1,100. Because what I thought in my head was she wanted to get a replacement for the snake. Well, now she's grown attached to the snake. She just wanted money. And I was just like, I cannot handle this. And I can't handle the shit that's going to come with it. And all your people you've talked to. So I have a list of people who I have screenshots who have talked shit about me. Won't come my fucking face because they're little bitches about it. But yeah, you got little gravity people and ball pythons just talking shit about one another. And they can't even man up and just confront me in person, direct message, ask me my side of the story. They're going to go on and listen to the sad story of what happened. And, you know, it's fine. I'm a bigger person, clearly. I'm a bigger person. I have no problem blasting you on a podcast if I need to. I can do anything wrong. And so it's egos like that and people who won't own up to their mistakes that really just irritate me. And if it was a snake I produced, I would have done what I could to replace. I would have offered her an animal of the exact value. I would have offered her another DG animal if I worked with DG. But I don't really have a lot of DG animals. And the fact is, if I didn't have to pay for that fence for the sanctuary, I would have had the animal still in my collection, and then I would have been fucked because it turned out not to be a DG. And I'm sorry that just happened to you, but at least I was able to help the original person who produced it get in contact with you and try to make something work. Now, I know a lot of sellers who wouldn't go above and beyond for that. And I know people talk shit about my character of how, well, you should have fixed it, blah, blah, blah. Was an animal I produced? There wasn't anything I could have done. I was completely transparent where I got the animal. I was completely transparent about why I was selling the animal. And if I didn't sell it, it would be in my collection. We both got fucked. And you got fucked less than I did. Because now you're dragging my name through the mud for something I didn't even produce. It's stuff like that that pisses me off.
So when did they get it tested? Like, was it during that time where it was like a whole uncertainty with the DG test? Or was it like more recently?
It was like in the last month.
Okay.
And the whole DG test, it's just stupid to me, too, because I have people who ask me, Anna, what do you think about shed testing? I'm like, I think it's great, but not when you do it for DG. And they're like, why not? Because I was like, there's DG A, B, and C. You're going to tell me you pair two visuals and you're not going to hit a visual DG? It's only happened once where only one snake from a clutch wasn't a visual. It's the same thing for breeding. Just forget that they have these tests and just do what you were going to normally do. Don't put too much thought and effort and time into shed testing. If you are just going to start buying animals based on that to help you, and in the long run, you're going to go spend money on a POS head, and it turns out not DG, now you're disappointed. You have an animal you have to feed to take care of just because you didn't want to spend the extra couple hundred dollars to go get 100% head and try your odds. It doesn't make sense.
What about you, Bill? What's an unpopular opinion you hold?
I'm scared to go now. I have had some frustrations in the ball python market. I had an infamous post on Morph Market, one of the Morph Market Facebook groups. It was the Facebook group was Morph Market Breeders.
Okay.
Maybe it's still around, I don't know. But I got on there and I had a particular experience with a woman that I referred to as a tire kicker. And this was a woman that we've all been there, right? Can I see more pictures? Can I see a video? Can I see pictures of the parents? Can I see a video of the parents? Can I see what were the parents of the parents? And, you know, where did you get? I mean, this was like 20 or 25 messages. I'm not exaggerating. Like a back and forth. She'd ask for a picture. Well, do you have a picture inside? I take a picture. Well, do you have one outside on a cloudy day? Outside on a cloudy day. So this went on and on and on. So I posted this particular encounter in person on the Facebook Morph Market Breeders group. trying to just give people a heads up. Hey, man, you may want to. You may want to. You know the story.
Yeah.
So you may want to just like, you know, giving a heads up to people, right? Well, that turned around and bit me in the ass big time. I had 100 people who I didn't know who the fuck they were commenting about how you should be a better salesman. You know, the customer is always right. You should never, you know, you'll never get that business again. And I'm like, well, good. Thank God. I'm trying to help you not ever get the business again. And so this went on for quite some time. Darian got involved. And you know, I think it was just a lot of there, some name calling and fat shaming was involved in it. And, it was just a brutal, brutal encounter. But I think that's my one and only like, controversial, episode, at least involving reptiles.
Do you regret making the post?
Depends on how much I've had to drink. I haven't had very much to drink today, so I regret it a little bit, but ask me this weekend and I'll say I don't regret it at all. So it was, I don't know. It was a learning experience. And yeah, I'm not in that group anymore.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Jason, Cassie, you guys got any controversial stories or unpopular opinions you hold?
I don't know how unpopular it is, but I'm kind of, as Bill mentioned, the ball python market. COVID was huge for everybody. Everybody was breeding everything, and I wish we would realize that COVID's not here anymore and adjust what we're doing accordingly and not just keep our foot on the gas and produce as much as we can. And then y'all all heard the race to the bottom. Everybody commenting about the race to the bottom as far as prices, ball pythons go. That would be, you know, slow down.
Yeah.
Slow down.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I have one. Holdbacks. When you produce some things and you hold back all these animals.
Hang on, she's talking about me here.
We're being told in 2 years it's not gonna fit the stuff. It's cool now, but in 2 years or more, it's not gonna be that cool. And then they don't agree with you and they think they got it. And then a year later, the animal is on the table for sale. It happens all the time.
Called out.
Yeah, it is true.
It's hard sometimes, though. I feel you, though. Me and Takara, we were laughing, like, I think, like, last week or something, because I got way more holdbacks than I intended to have. And so I might need to let some go, but it's hard sometimes. Like, you just want to keep them.
Well, in my defense, since then, I've hit a game-changing animal or two, and you know that, and yeah, those animals that I was holding back are not as integral to the plan as I originally thought they were. So, and a big deal with me is I'm on a very limited space. I'm in a 10x12 room, and so that's hatchlings, incubator, breeders, the whole nine. And so, I've got to be pretty conscientious about that. And sometimes I'm just not very good about it. You know, we're all our own best customers, so.
Yeah, you got to pay yourself first.
Hard, sometimes hard to be disciplined, but I'm getting better.
Just a little bit.
Yes, that much.
A little progress. You know, say we build on that. We start then and we build, get better, get better, get better. I'm the wrong person to ask for like advice on that because I'm a bad influence.
Let's hear your controversy.
What's my controversy? So actually, Jason, and I don't mean to like steal your thunder, like try to like piggyback off your answer, but that's something that we were actually just talking about last week, is like people like overproducing and just like driving a project into the ground, and like you look up and it's just like pennies on the dollar. Obviously, prices a couple years ago were inflated. That's a given. is the natural kind of like life cycle of like projects for certain like combos in that project to like drop. And so I understand like kind of all those factors, but then you like see somebody who got like a 1.15 or whatever, like just something crazy for a crazy price, and then like it just like plummets like everything around it. So that kind of bothers me. Like obviously I ain't been in this but like 4 years, right? So I haven't had like the opportunity to kind of go through the cycles, and so maybe one day I might change my mind or kind of look at it differently. But like right now, from like my vantage point, like what I'm seeing, it just kind of like sucks to see that prices on like a specific project just get like driven into the ground to like it's almost like not even worth working the project anymore, right?
You've seen a crazy 4 years then, because you've gone from, you know, I've been in it 2 decades or longer. You went for probably the most prolific time period to really, this is probably, you know, there've been downturns before, but this is probably one of the top two that I can remember. Maybe the biggest downturn that I can remember. So you experienced that in 4 years. That's crazy. So I can understand where your emotions are probably all over the chart, you know?
Yeah, it's obviously I know it's about the long game, but it's definitely like kind of like shocking, like jarring, just to see like how quickly like certain stuff drop.
Yeah.
So when was other downturn that you were kind of comparing to this one?
Oh, like around 2008, you know, the economic crash in 2008. There was a big downturn in the market then. I mean, there's a downturn in everything, kind of like the economy and inflation now. You know, it's certainly what we're experiencing now in the last year is a combination of things. It was a rebound from COVID, because everybody that had money spent it and bought animals. But then also on top of that, now you've got a not a great economy and high inflation. So, you know, and it was similar back in that time as well, except you didn't have the relative overproduction of animals at that time. You just had a really bad economy.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. So that was right before you got in 2010,
2013? 2010. Okay. So what's y'all's advice for folks like kind of like thinking about as we kind of hopefully head out of this, based on like what we've seen like probably the last several months? Like what's y'all advice for folks in terms of like how to best deal with like the market, adapting like your business model and things like that? Y'all have any advice for folks moving forward over the next few years?
Well, I'll just say real quick, you've already seen the weed out happen, right?
I mean, people dropping out left and right.
Already been a massive weed out, you know, in the last 12 to 18 months. People, you've seen this, all the breeders for sale, entire collection for sale, everything, you know, people just getting out. And that's, you know, to be brutally honest, that's what the rest of us need to happen. And then you just be stubborn and just, you know, ride it out and just continue to do this for the reason really you got into it in the first place, is because you like the animals. And, you know, the this will pass.
Okay. The market too is you can certainly take advantage of acquiring animals. I mean, let's be honest, with the prices the way they are, you can pick up stuff now that,
yeah,
you know, you way you could have touched it for,
you know, no doubt about it.
So yeah, that's positive. I would just say breed for yourself. For furthering your own projects, and tone it down, you know, would be my advice.
I think there's two things. Number one, to withstand this, you need to be passionate about it. And number two, have a plan, because otherwise you're going to have a mess. Now, you know, you don't want to be stuck with a whole lot of things and going in all different directions and not have any direction for yourself or your projects.
True, true. What about you, Anna?
Hey.
Say again.
Have a good CPA who can do your taxes for your business when you're starting out. That is my solid advice for everyone.
It's a good idea. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Be creative. Take advantage of take advantage of what's out there, especially when things are not going well. That's when you really need, you know, a good CPA's help, is, you know, to help you take losses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good CPA. And get a good mentor. If you're going to try to do this as a business, find someone that is doing projects that you kind of are similar to, but might have a little different edge to it, and pick their brain and then ask them, like, hey, could I come to you for help? And if they say no, go find someone else who's cooler. But if they say yes, I mean, use that knowledge they have and don't sign up for some stupid ass Patreon to get the answers that someone else will give to you for free. And go, if you need questions, go to Earl. Earl will give you all the information for free. And he's been around for years. Not that he's old or anything. It's just he's been around.
It's true, true.
He knows stuff.
They're both true.
Another big thing is build those relationships. That's going to be huge in the community. He got a, I'm lost for words.
Ultrasound,
and he was struggling with it. Something wasn't well, and who was it that helped you out?
It was.
He's on the East Coast.
Paco Miranda.
Yeah, he. What they were just messaging back and forth, and he mentioned the struggles, and Paco rocked, and it was late at night, and he was like, okay, hang on a second, and went down, took a video, and helped him right then. And nice. I think Paco, what, once in person?
Nice. That's dope. Yeah, it's cool to have, like, great people in your circle. Like, people who really want you to succeed, right? They're not just trying to take advantage of you and stuff like that, but people who really want to see you succeed.
Yeah, that was super nice. And then it's fun when you go to shows and going out to dinner with them and just chit chat and having a good time, or when you have those slow times at the show and walk around, stop at a table and just chit chat and have a good time, you know, that like-minded conversation.
Gotcha. So I asked this question last week on the show, and Bill, you made me think of it again when you mentioned that lots of folks are getting out, right? And so, like, obviously, like, people have, like, personal stuff that come up, some sort of hardship, some sort of challenge, and some people, like, they keep pushing through it. Brittany, Jen, and Tommy last week, like, they told some really great stories about or some really, like, inspiring stories about, like, challenges they had, and they pushed through it, and, like, they're still here to talk about it. So we can start with you, Bill, since you made me think of the question. Like, has there been a time where, like, life just kind of, like hit you real hard, and you had to kind of, like, push through it to kind of continue down the reptile breeding path, whereas, like, some folks might have given up? And if so, can you share that story with us?
Yeah, there's one really that comes to mind, and that was 6 years ago. You know, I retired from my clinical practice. I was a practicing anesthesiologist for 25 years, and I knew towards the end of that I no longer wanted to do that. In other words, I was burned out. I knew I couldn't. I was still relatively young at the time, but I just couldn't finish my career. And I had turned my reptile business into a small business probably 10 years prior to that. But I knew that if I was going to leave that profession and pursue another one, reptiles full time, that I had to crank it up, right? I couldn't just be producing 10 or 12 clutches of ball pythons a year and, like, make, you know, or a green tree clutch and make that my career. So I spent really about 2 to 3 years where I was essentially double dipping. You know, I was working 60 or 70 hours a week as a physician, and then I was working, you know, 30 hours a week trying to build up the, you know, the reptile business and everything that goes along with that, not just producing animals, but building up everything, the marketing and perfecting how to take pictures. And social media at the time was starting, you know, to become really prevalent in the business model. So really for two years, you know, keeping snakes was not fun. You know, I really, you know, when I'd worked all week and I have one day a week off and I have to go out there and spend 12 hours of it, you know, cleaning and taking care of snakes, and, you know, it just wasn't fun. And so, but luckily, you know, I saw the bigger picture, and just, it was almost like one more day, one more week, one more month, and then this will be over. And it was. And when that day ended, And it was like I was reborn literally. And the reptiles became pleasurable again, and they became, I became, you know, it was almost like I was starting over. So
nice, yeah. Nice. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that a lot in a lot of ways.
And I know a lot of people now are they're doing their full time, you know, or more. They're doing their 50 hours a week, and then they're doing this because the reptiles, you know, can't contribute all of the income they need. So they're, and I know for a lot of people out there, sometimes it's got to seem like work too.
Nice. And I don't know if you've been noticing, but like they're keeping up with it in the chat, like where you at? You're almost at $30.
Oh no.
So will you tell us about this challenge you had? You can do it cuss free. I give you permission.
Oh, my challenge?
Yeah, your challenge.
Let's see. Trying to figure out which one. I think I'm stubborn enough to not quit. I think that's a weakness for me, is I will continue things through even through a shit mountain. I think it really hit me when I emptied my 401k to invest in this. And I said, this is it. Like, this has to go for me or I'm fucked. And my husband looked at me. He was like, did you just buy another horse? I was like, no, it's worse. But don't worry about it. I got it. So I think my biggest challenge for me is making sure that I'm going to produce something enough that's going to help me generations to come, because I'm in it for the long run. But I also gave myself a double-edged sword, because I'm doing morphs that people don't know about, or they're not very well known in America. And so my dumb ass decided, yeah, let's bring in imports. Let's bring in these things that people are going to love. And then at every show, what is this? What does this do? Does this have a super? Where'd you get this from? And I have like a little essay on my website of exactly each gene I work with, where it came from, who produced it, the supers and all this stuff. But when you have animals at shows that no one's heard of, or genes that no one's heard of, it's hard to sell them. So I made it more difficult on myself, because now I have to go produce sick ass animals to prove they have something to do it with. And so it's easier when people start jumping in, like Nala. Finally, people started jumping in on that. Billy finally, like he's mentioned it several times. And so that's what made people, I think, get interested in Nala. Then you have Furrow, which is still not heard of. And I got rid of my super Furrow female. I traded her out, so I'm no longer in Furrow. My main point is Twister, which that's the one thing I'll have in my collection in probably 2 years will all be Twister animals. So I won't have anything else that does not include Twister, because that was like my baby gene I wanted to bring to the U.S. and I wanted to be known for Twister. And it's a granite gene, and people are like, oh, another granite gene? Like, yeah, it's sick as shit. If you don't like it, go away. But like Orbit's another one. Orbit's not worked with a lot in the U.S., and it gives this nice earthy red wine color as it ages. And so I think one of my biggest sales was out of Arlington. I sold an Orbit, and the guy was going to go put it in the Sunset Project to make sure it didn't turn to shit. I thought that was sick. I was like, hell yeah, go do that. I've never heard from the guy again. I don't know if he still has it. I don't know if he's still doing the Sunset Project. I don't know if he's still in ball pythons. But like having that idea of projects where you can go and do it, I like that. But I think that was my hardest thing, was saying, oh, here, let's drain your 401k. Here we go.
That's but tough.
Like that.
It's a big, that's a big move. That's a right. Big move. That's, yeah.
But I take it from what my life expectancies of, I've been homeless before. I've been in an abusive relationship. I've been homeless again. I've hitchhiked from 4 states away, and now I live on a farm with a pig that I'm going to eat in November with 5 horses. I feel like I can take on anything. It's just, I got to tell myself that I can do it. And so it helps when you have a husband who's just like, okay, go do your crazy shit. I'll be right here. And so he helps. He waters the rats sometimes. But it's helpful. But yeah, I think that was my biggest challenge, is financially just being like, all right, YOLO, and then just going for it.
I think
one
thing that all four of us can say, right? Spousal support is paramount where we are right now, right?
Absolutely. Like, I say all the time, man, I would not be able to do half of this stuff if it wasn't for Takara. Like,
yep,
no question. And so, speaking of spousal support, Jason and Cassie.
Oh, I think people need to realize, and we've all been there, we're dealing with live animals. And when you're dealing with live animals, stuff happens. It's just the way it is. And sometimes it's not good stuff. I don't care what anybody says. If you've been doing it any time at all, you've had something happen. You know, the further you get into it, we mentioned emptying our 401k and whatnot. Sometimes you're spending money, and sometimes it's a lot of money. And sometimes you open that tub and you think it's all slow. You know, just that you just got to be able. I mean, it is what it is. You know, I've got my spot nose confusion clan male right now that's not doing squat. I'm not going to tell y'all what I paid for him, but he ain't earning any money right now. I can tell you that. So it's just part of it. It is what it is. You know, it's live animals. You can't make them do anything. You know, sometimes they don't live. Sometimes, you know, it is. And resiliency is a lot of it. You just got to keep on going. I mean, you know, that's all you can do. So.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cassie, anything you want to add on to that? Or he summed it up perfectly for y'all.
I think that was good. And then just in doing this together, choosing your battles. And when I first got into this with him, I thought we had to do everything together and I had to help with everything. Not anymore.
Like everything.
Not anymore.
And I dislike the rat so much. He just, sometimes the rats ain't ratting.
They cause rage issues sometimes. It's just, you know, the whole water leaks, you know what can, y'all done the rat thing, y'all know what can happen, and it's just sometimes can be frustrating.
So moral of the story is I don't help clean rats anymore. I help like feed, water them and stuff like that, because that takes hot minutes. So he cleans them, and then when he's towards the end, I feed, I help water, and I shop back the building that we have.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So y'all still got a teamwork process.
Yeah.
So y'all just breed Norwegians, or y'all breed any other rodents?
Norwegian ASFs.
Okay. What do you like breeding better, ASFs or the Norwegians?
What's that?
So what do you like breeding better, the ASFs or the Norwegians?
Oh, it just depends. I mean, the ASFs, the less smell and all that, you know, they're great for starting baby ball pythons, but then you got the Norwegians are great for growing ball pythons. So, you know, it's good to have them both. But that was some of the best money I spent getting set up properly in rats, having their own space, having them out of, you know, away from the house, having it insulated, it's air conditioned, it's heated, it's all the things you need to have for rats. It's just been a huge stress relief. As well, you know, you hear all the time about people who can't feed their collection, they don't produce like they thought they were going to because they had a rat shortage, and it's just nice to be able to go out and get what you need and just have it right there. So
yeah, that's a game changer. Like having your own rodent supply is a game changer in a lot of ways. I mean, you know exactly what you feed in, and then from a cost perspective, like you can reduce your costs. I mean, it's a lot of work, don't get me wrong, but it's definitely a game changer in some of those other ways.
You will likely spend more time with your rats than you do your snakes if you got many rodents at all.
Yeah, it's work. Like we triple team like our rodents. Like on we only have to do it like once a week because we got ASFs, and so like we'll triple team, and like between myself, Takara, and then my son Mike. We triple team, so we got like a nice like little workflow where we'll be like swapping them out. That's the other thing too, like having extra tubs, like that helps a lot too. And so like we'll go in there, we'll get everything set up and start cleaning, and then we just like swapping out the rodents, putting the food in there, and then like my son is like washing them as we go and then filling the tubs back up with like substrate and stuff. So it goes real quick, but it's a lot of work because I have done it, we have done it, like when we don't have all three of us there, and it take way longer.
It takes a long time for sure. Yeah.
For sure, for sure. Well, guys, we coming up on an hour and a half. So I do want to make sure I give y'all plenty of time to enjoy the rest of your night. First of all, I appreciate y'all coming on, man. It's been an amazing show. Been looking forward to chatting with y'all all week. Like I said, it's one of the highlights of my week, man. But before we get out of here, y'all want to tell everybody where they can find you about any kind of any big things you got coming up? We can start with you, Anna. I like how you bust out laughing every time I call on you.
It's like I'm being picked on by the teacher. You can find me on everything, AK Morse. You could just Google. If you can't find me on anything else, it'll pop up. I think my Twister and my Xanthic Monsoons are my big projects this year.
I can't wait to see that. Yeah. Bill?
Probably Instagram is the best way to touch base with me, Phoenix Reptiles on Instagram. Happy to chat with anybody there if they have any questions about green trees or any interest in them. And what's going on? Once a year, I take me and a couple of my crew members here to do an out-of-town reptile show. And this weekend is going to be that weekend. So we're going to San Antonio to do a Lone Star, Lone Star San Antonio show, which I've never done before. But so we're going to box up a bunch of ball pythons and bring them to San Antonio this weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend.
Okay.
So really looking forward to that. And other than that, the green tree babies will keep me plenty busy this year.
Nice, nice. Jason, Cassie?
Find us on Instagram. That's mainly where we're most active. Big Country Restrictors, obviously. And we're hoping, if things go well, to have some new DG Clown combos that are het for lots of other stuff. So we're moving towards our quads and whatnot. So, but hopefully some new combos that we hadn't seen before would be good.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I'll definitely keep my eyes peeled for that. Yeah, I've been producing some dope stuff. All of y'all have been producing some really nice stuff. So, yeah, like I said, man, I really enjoyed it tonight. Really appreciate y'all coming on the show with us tonight, man. Everybody in the chat, we appreciate y'all coming through each and every week. Shout out to the replay gang. Any of y'all who might be catching this on YouTube on the replay, shout out to the audio only gang. Everyone checking us out on the podcasting platforms. That's it for tonight for Clutch Conversations. I'm Mike, the lovely lady behind the scenes is Dakar. Thank y'all for coming out. Be blessed. Peace. We'll be right back.